Welcome to Redmond Radio. I'm your host, Michael Domingo. This week's episode, Microsoft shareholders get a vote on executive pay, Microsoft tackles malvertising, and Microsoft releases Windows Embedded CE 6.0 R3 and System Center. As well, Google finds a way to bypass the Internet Explorer engine, and Dell buys Perot Systems. That and more when we come back to Redmond Radio after this quick musical interlude. Welcome once again to Redmond Radio, the weekly podcast updating you on the latest IT news to come out of Redmond. I'm your host, Michael Domingo, and I thank you for downloading and listening to the show. As always, I welcome your feedback at mdomingo@1105media. That's mdomingo at 1105media.com. And I would certainly love to hear from you by voice if you want to record a quick message by calling me at 949-265-1564. Also, you can catch the show on redmondradio.podbean.com. That's especially if you want to download the show automatically, especially if you're using something like iTunes. The Podbean version of the show also includes more information, and once in a while I'll announce contests that are only available by looking at the description page at redmondradio.podbean.com. Redmond Radio listeners via the Podbean version can find out how to win an MCP MagCap this week, so check it out. How about let me get right into it? Let's talk about Redmond news. First up, Microsoft is instituting a say-on-pay policy that will let its shareholders vote on compensation for Microsoft's senior executives. The votes will be non-binding and can be overruled by Microsoft's board, which decides executive pay. Shareholders will be able to express their opinions on the matter every 3 years. A 3-year interval is needed to match Microsoft's compensation policy, said Brad Smith, Microsoft's General Counsel and Corporate Secretary, and John Seethoff, Microsoft's Vice President and Deputy General Counsel. Microsoft typically assesses the performance of its executives over multiple years. In a Friday post, both of them said a 3-year cycle will provide investors sufficient time to evaluate the effectiveness of our short and long-term compensation strategies and related business outcomes. The blog noted that Congress and the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission are currently considering say-on-pay proposals, and that Microsoft aims to comply with any requirements that emerge. But those government proposals appear to be aimed at reassessing pay annually, not every 3 years. Currently, there are 2 U.S. congressional bills promising non-binding shareholder votes on executive pay. The House version is called the Corporate and Financial Institution Compensation Fairness Act of 2009, and the Senate version is titled Shareholder Bill of Rights Act of 2009. That one's sponsored by Senators Charles Schumer and Maria Cantwell. Both bills appear to be timed to address recent financial scandals. Wall Street firms widely instituted executive pay hikes even as those firms lost millions, and even as they accepted taxpayer bailouts in the form of troubled asset relief program funds. Microsoft has been generating less revenue during the economic downturn, and even announced layoffs affecting about 5,000 people. Chris Liddell, Microsoft's chief financial officer, has mentioned that employee pay was flat for the year. Still, some Microsoft executives received an increase, such as Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer. Microsoft's new say-on-pay policy is scheduled to begin on November 19th at the company's next shareholder meeting. Lawyers for Microsoft and Toronto-based i4i conducted oral arguments before the U.S. Federal Circuit Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C. last Wednesday in a patent dispute case. The case involves the use of custom XML technology in Microsoft Word. A jury rendered a verdict against Microsoft back in May. Microsoft appealed the final judgment in that case, which awarded i4i more than $240 million in damages and penalties. The judgment also enjoined future sales of Word starting on October 10th. Microsoft did win a stay of the judgment pending appeal on August 16th. With the appeal's oral arguments concluded, the next step will be the appeals court judge's decision. It could take 2 to 4 months for a decision to be handed down, according to Loudon Owen, i4i's chairman. In its appeal, Microsoft contested the patent violation and questioned the conduct of the judge as a gatekeeper during the trial. The company's lawyers argued that the judgment should be voided or Microsoft should get another trial. i4i filed a rebuttal earlier this month to Microsoft's initial appeal. In response, Microsoft filed a reply last week. Those court papers claimed that the inventor of the custom XML technology, Michael Volpe, now founder and CTO of i4i, congratulated Microsoft for adding the technology to Microsoft Word. But Volpe disputes that account. He sent an email to Sean Powley of Microsoft, but the email just congratulated him for using XML generically. Last week, Microsoft filed a civil lawsuit against five companies for allegedly spreading malicious online advertising. The case centers on the practice of malvertising, where an online ad directs a user to a website with malicious code after being clicked. The defendants named in Microsoft's lawsuit filed in Seattle's King County Superior Court included Soft Solutions, DirectAd, IT Meter, and OTE 2008. Malvertising typically leads to scareware, a pop-up notice on a Windows machine telling the user about a security threat. The notice directs the user to download an antivirus program that may turn out to be malware. Microsoft is asking the court to shut down these companies because they allegedly use Microsoft's Ad Manager service, which filters and conveys ads on websites. Microsoft contends that the defendants used Ad Manager as a platform to launch those attacks. The lawsuit is, quote, vitally important because online advertising helps keep the internet up and running, end quote, according to Microsoft's Associate General Counsel, Tim Cranton. Cranton added that fraud and malicious abuse of online ad platforms are therefore a serious threat to the industry and to those who use such free or low-cost services on the internet. Tyler Reguli, a security research engineer at NCircle, wonders if the whole tech ecosystem has gone overboard with monetizing the internet. Advertisements of all kinds get pushed to make money, so that in the current environment, users can scarcely see a page download without stumbling upon ads. And some of those ads are questionable, even on legitimate sites. Said Reguli, malvertising is definitely a growing trend and a dangerous one, but at the same time, I don't know that a civil suit will really accomplish much beyond bringing attention to the issue. But that may be Microsoft's goal. Microsoft has also tried to protect its ad platform from click fraud, where ads get clicked repeatedly by a person or program to increase costs for advertisers. The company filed a civil lawsuit over the matter in June. Also last week, Microsoft announced a number of updates to its System Center line of server management products. The updates affect products such as Operations Manager, Virtual Machine Manager, and Configuration Manager, all part of the System Center line. Typically, the updates add support for Microsoft's latest operating systems. First, the software giant offered some good news for those using Operations Manager 2007 SP1 or Operations Manager 2007 R2. Those apps can now run on Microsoft's latest operating system, including Windows Server 2008 R2 and Windows 7. One exception is that server roles aren't supported under Windows 7. Those who still use Operations Manager 2005 and want to run the latest Microsoft OSs are out of luck. Operations Manager 2005 doesn't support Windows Server 2008 or R2 or Windows 7. Also announced last week, Operations Manager 2007 R2 now supports Windows Embedded Standard 2009, which is Microsoft's OS for devices. Users can run an agent that will monitor the health of Windows Embedded Standard 2009. And to get the agent running, users first have to install the System Center Operations Manager 2007 R2 agent prerequisites macro for Windows Embedded Standard 2009. And yes, that is a mouthful. Details are described in the System Center blog. Finally, on the Operations Manager 2007 V2 front, Microsoft released an update last week to the Windows Key Management Service, Management Pack. The update extends support for Windows Server 2008 R2 and Win 7. It also adds support for non-Windows KMS applications. Microsoft also updated a couple of tools that support System Center Virtual Machine Manager. SCVMM Configuration Analyzer was released to the web last week. And Configuration Analyzer now supports SCVMM 2008 and version R2, allowing users to check their computers that can be used to run SCVMM server. Alternatively, the Configuration Analyzer can be run on a computer to see if it can be used as a host for Windows Server. Microsoft also released to the web a product that helps IT pros collect system and log info for SCVMM troubleshooting and support. Microsoft also issued a knowledge base article this month on System Center Configuration Manager 2007 SP1, detailing a recently released roll-up package that adds support for Windows Server 2008 R2 and Windows 7 clients. The roll-up provides client support only for those operating systems, according to a System Center team blog. The blog points to the upcoming SP2 as a more optimal solution than SP1. SP2 is expected to appear near the end of October. Microsoft is also working on Configuration Manager 2007 R3, which is planned for final product release by the late first quarter of 2010. Last week at the Embedded Systems Conference in Boston, Microsoft announced the release to manufacturing of Windows Embedded CE 6.0 R3. The R3 release is a minor OS update that's notable for adding Windows 7 connectivity to Microsoft's compact operating system for devices. developers and original equipment manufacturers have access to Windows 7 Device Stage, a kind of device driver portal that resides in the OS. In addition, the R3 release includes Microsoft Connection Manager to help connect devices with PCs. The new OS can support consumer internet devices as well as full-featured small Windows-based notebooks, according to Kevin Dallas, Microsoft's general manager of the Windows Embedded Business Unit. Here's one more item before we take a break. Microsoft bolstered its Dynamics AX Enterprise Resource Planning product by acquiring intellectual properties from three of its partners. The acquisitions announced last week are intended to extend the core capabilities of Microsoft Dynamics AX. They include a process manufacturing solution from Fullscope, a professional service solution from Computer Generated Solutions, and two retail solutions from LS Retail EHF and two Increase Denmark AS. Dynamics AS is one of four offerings in the rather complex Microsoft Dynamics ERP product line. Microsoft Dynamics AX focuses on five key industries, according to Microsoft, including manufacturing, retail, professional services, distribution, and the public sector. R. Ray Wong, partner for enterprise strategy at Altimeter Group, said in a blog that creating a broader set of common industry capabilities that sit on top of core Microsoft Dynamics AX accelerates both Microsoft and its partners' ability to extend vertical capabilities. The bottom line, he said, is that customers will have greater customization capabilities. Microsoft benefits from the acquisition of industry-proven technologies and an embedded customer base. And with that, how about a break? We'll continue with more news in a second. Here's a message from 1105 Media, sponsored by Microsoft. Attend Microsoft TechEd Europe 2009 this November 9th through the 13th in Berlin, Germany. Whether you're an IT professional or developer, the opportunity to learn, explore, and connect with the technology and the people that will shape the future takes place at TechEd Europe in mid-November. Take advantage of a special offer by registering before September 30th and receive €300 off the full price point of €2,195 plus VAT. For details, go to www.microsoft.com/europe/TechEd. And welcome back to Redmond Radio. Before we continue with more news, how about another episode of IT Web Gems? Some technological breakthroughs are a result of hard work and thought, with a desired result. That's not the case with penicillin, an antibiotic discovered purely by accident by Alexander Fleming. There are scientific arguments that penicillin may have been discovered earlier, but what we use today is a result of mold that Fleming recalled growing in a petri dish that had created a barrier against bacteria growing in that same dish. Fleming detailed this discovery in a journal on September 28, 1928. Jumping back to more recent technological history, to October 1, 1982, Disney opened up the Experimental Prototype Community of Tomorrow, or EPCOT, the Mouse House's homage, so to speak, to the utopian world whose basis in technology runs deep. 2 years later, Richard Stallman had a different dream, that of free software, and his work in that vein led to what eventually was the seed for Linux. Stallman announced his new project on what existed of early internet-based bulletin boards in 1983, and 2 years later, he published the New Manifesto and incorporated the Free Software Foundation. It wasn't until 6 years later that Torvalds developed the Linux kernel using the new development tools and employing a philosophical approach to software development based on Stallman's ideas. Also introduced this week, back in 1982, Sony's first CD player. Another home run out of the park for the company after its highly successful Walkman. And finally, in 1993, then-President Clinton signed into law an electronic amendment to the Freedom of Information Act, which made possible the content of one of my favorite sites, thesmokinggun.com. Check it out sometime and check out my latest contest. Last week's show, I told you about H.G. Wells' birthday. Well, as a tribute to the man, whose imagination and others over the years had us thinking about technology, I'm giving away an MCP Mag baseball cap to one lucky person among all entries who tell me what work of science fiction or fiction had an influence on you, that you eventually took a serious look at technology and maybe a technology career. Let me just tell you that for me, it was Edgar Rice Burroughs and his Mars books that started it all. I've never been a big fan of sci-fi, though, or fantasy. But I did read a fair share of it, including some Bradbury, some Ellison, Asimov, as well as Arthur C. Clarke, to name a few off the top of my head. I've yet to crack open any H.G. Wells, though. So there. I'm still looking for submissions, which you can send to me at mdomingo@1105media.com. What I'm basically saying is that your chances of winning an MCP Mag baseball cap are real good if you're the only one to act on this message right now. And that's this week's IT Web Gems. Let's get back to some news. Google last week introduced a coding plugin for website developers that instructs Internet Explorer browsers to use Google Chrome technologies. That plugin is called the Google Chrome Frame, and it's still in the early release stage, according to a Google blog. The blog features a video suggesting that IE8 will pass the ACID 3 test while using Google Chrome Frame. It also suggests that developers will see better support for rich internet applications by using the plugin. The switch is triggered by adding a single tag to a website's HTML markup. It tells IE to use the open source WebKit web content engine favored by the Google Chrome browser rather than Microsoft's IE Trident layout engine. Web developers can take advantage of upcoming HTML5 technologies and recent JavaScript performance improvements by using Google Chrome Frame, according to Google's blog. However, HTML5 is still at the draft stage. W3C documentation points to a release milestone for the HTML recommendation sometime in 2009 to 2010. A Google spokesperson said that final changes to the HTML5 spec might happen in October or November. HTML5 will have offline capabilities allowing calendar or email applications to sync, as well as audio and video tags that don't depend on the browser using Adobe Flash or Microsoft Silverlight. A spokesperson for Microsoft explained in a release statement that HTML5 is a standard in progress, and the makers of it say it will be years after, at least, before it's done. In a surprise announcement last Monday, Dell said it plans to purchase Perot Systems for approximately $3.9 billion. Terms of the agreement were approved last week by both boards of directors, according to a joint announcement. Dell will commence a tender offer to acquire all outstanding Class A common stock of Perot Systems for $30 per share in cash. The companies say the merger will mean a broader range of IT services and solutions and optimization of their delivery, as well as a broader reach of Perot Systems capabilities, and more Perot System customers will have access to Dell computer systems. Over the past four quarters, Dell and Perot Systems had a combined $16 billion in enterprise hardware and IT services revenue. The merger will create a firm with about $8 billion in combined services and support, said Michael Dell, chairman and CEO of Dell. Dell said that there will be more organic acquisitions and opportunities to grow, whether it's government or healthcare or commercial or the global opportunities. Once the acquisition is complete, Perot Systems will become Dell's services unit. The transaction, which is subject to customary government approvals and the satisfaction of other customary conditions, is expected to close in Dell's November through January fiscal quarter. The College of Computing at Georgia Tech is looking to transform economic lemons into educational lemonade by shifting unemployed technology professionals into teaching careers. Dubbed Operation Reboot, the program is designed to prepare IT professionals to teach high school computer science. It kicked off September 1st with an initial set of 30 technology workers and is expected to operate for the next 3 years. It's being funded by a $2.5 million grant from the National Science Foundation. Combining the Georgia Teacher Alternative Preparation Program with the university's high school computing teacher training program, the initiative will pair computing teachers with IT professionals to teach at least two CS courses together for 1 year. The IT workers will become familiar with classroom teaching environments and will receive a teaching certificate and computer science endorsement. According to information released by the university, Georgia Tech will publish findings from the project and share materials with other states to serve as a model on how to successfully transform unemployed IT workers into high school computing teachers. In a news release, Georgia Tech said that the project may result in 30% more students receiving CS educations in high schools that receive the benefits of the program. And in our last news item, PC shipments took a dive in the second quarter, although they were steadied to a degree by consumer spending on portable PCs. That according to IDC's latest worldwide quarterly PC tracker report. Overall, worldwide PC shipments decreased 2.4% in the second quarter of 2009, year over year. But shipments of consumer portables, which include notebooks, mini notebooks, and ultra-thin notebooks, increased 44% from a year ago. Commercial portables used for business did not fare as well, falling 16% year over year. Desktop PCs fell by 17% over that same period. In IDC's first quarter report released in June, overall PC shipments had declined by 6.8% year over year, while portables rose 1.4% in the same period. IDC attributed the rise in portable PC shipments to the popularity of low-cost mini notebooks. With an average price of just above $400, mini notebooks are challenging the traditional notebook PC space. IDC sees the overall market for PCs stabilizing over the next few quarters, with worldwide shipments increasing gradually through 2013. The portable PC segment of the market will account for nearly 70% of the market in 2013, according to IDC projections. And believe it or not, we've come to the end of this episode of Redmond Radio. I'd like to say thanks once again to all you listeners who continue to support Redmond Radio by streaming and downloading this program, and especially those who pass this show on to their colleagues. I'm Michael Domingo. I will chat with you here next week right here on Redmond Radio.